All right. Good afternoon, everyone. We're going to go ahead and begin our technical coordinating committee for February 15th. Before we get started, though, I do see some new faces. So if we could do some introductions starting at my right, will you go ahead and introduce yourself, your name, and who you're with? Oh, hit the button to turn on the mic on the right.
Okay. Heath Mains, Savannah Airport.
Nathan Clark, City of Richmond Hill.
Mary Moskowitz, Chatham Area Transit.
Kayla Brown, Bike Walk Savannah, and I'm also Vice Chair.
Deanna Brooks, Chatham County Chair.
Michelle Strickland, City of Savannah Traffic Engineering.
Ganesh Sethi, GDOT Office of Planning.
Tim County and Effingham County.
Thank you, everyone. So we will start with our first item, which is approval of the agenda.
Hi. Are there any changes or no? I move to approve.
I don't have any changes.
To approve.
Second.
All right. So that has been approved and seconded. Can we start a vote on my left?
Callanan, yes.
Ganesh Sethi, yes.
Michelle Strickland, yes.
Deanna Brooks, yes.
Kayla Brown, yes.
Mary Moskowitz, yes.
Nathan Clark, yes.
Heath Mains, yes.
Thank you. Moving on to our first action item, approval of the December 7 minutes. Can we go ahead and get started on that one? Do we have any concerns with the December 7th minutes?
Move to approve.
Move to second.
All right, we will start the vote to the right to approve the December 7th minutes.
Oh. Yes.
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 All right. And then the next agenda item will be the 2045 MTP amendment.
Good afternoon. GDOT sent us this request for the 2045 long-range transportation plan amendment for a right-of-way phase for a project. In our participation plan, so we have three kinds of changes to the long-range transportation plan: administrative modification, one-step amendment, and two-step amendment. So this request actually fits into the one-step amendment because the request is more than a minor revision, and the request will not affect the funding or timing of other project in the long-range transportation plan. So I'm just going to. Okay. This is the request that GDOT sent us. They want us to add right-of-way phase in cost band 2 in 2028 for the US 17 Savannah River crossing. The cost is about $500,000. The reason for amendment, basically it was a feasibility study and it was all local funds from the Georgia Ports Authority. So that's why it's not included in our long range transportation plan. We do have a maintenance project, tightening the cable at the bridge, Talmadge Bridge, and GDOT considered that as a short-term fix. And this long-term fix would be probably replacement of the bridge itself, the Talmadge Bridge. So GDOT did the feasibility study, and now they're at the stage where FHWA is saying that you have to have this right-of-way phase included in the long-range transportation plan before FHWA can review the feasibility study results or recommendations or alternatives. So we are just trying to help GDOT to move on with this so they can just complete the scoping phase and move on to the preliminary engineering phase, at least for FHWA to review the project alternative recommendations before further steps. But I did communicate with GDOT saying that If we add this right-of-way phase $500,000 into the 2045, and you know that we update in the 2050, we need to carry this forward to 2050. But I want to make sure the construction phase wouldn't be included in our 2050, because that will kill all the other projects. That will be huge. So it will be a long, long, long range. So that was my coordination with GDOT, just to make sure about that. But this is just because GDOT indicated that they will provide additional funds. So that wouldn't impact. That means that we will have additional revenues, so we will not kick out other projects. So for the long range plan amendment, financial balance is the most important thing, and we should be okay with that. So in order for FHWA to review the study recommendations, staff proposed that the TCC endorse the proposed MTP amendment, so to add the right-of-way phase. Any questions?
I don't think we have any questions. Can we move to accept or recommend the MTP amendment?
Second.
Who was that seconded?
Jamie McCurry, Georgia Ports.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for joining us today. Now that that's been moved and seconded, can we start the vote to our right?
Yes.
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 Thank you very much. We will go to our next item, which is the fiscal year TIP amendments for this month.
Okay. You may remember that we had a lot of coordination with GDOT before the last fiscal year ends for this Truman Linear Park Trail project, because at that time we had about $6.4 million programmed for this project, but unfortunately, GDOT was in a rush to authorize the funds, and they could only authorize the funds based on the cost estimate, the most up-to-date cost estimate at that time. So at that time, the cost estimate was $3.8 million or $3.9 million. We knew that wouldn't be enough, so it turned out it would be a problem. So City of Savannah actually did the bidding, and they received the three bids, and the lowest bid is about $7.8 million. So that's include the lowest bid amount and plus 5% contingency cost. But the city decided to use the 10% contingency cost. So that means the total amount would be about $8.2 million. And we have authorized $3.9 million. So we have like $4.3 million short. So City of Savannah approached us to see whether we can come up with additional funds. And so I did the financial balance, and I checked. We got about 16, this is the federal portion, $16,000 of the carbon reduction program funds, and then $231,000 for Y230 funds. So this would be all of the money that the MPO can cough up. But we decided to help the city anyway. Because we have the balance. So we will provide about $250,000, and the City of Savannah will come up with the rest of the money. So they provide the local match and for the carbon reduction program and the white facility program, and they will have to come up almost $4 million additional local funds. I coordinated with GDOT. We agreed upon the theory that before we program any federal dollars, we have to add this new construction phase. So to authorize the additional construction funds. So basically we're adding this new construction phase into fiscal year 2024. And when we finalize the TIP amendment, and it will be entered into the GDOT system, hopefully next month or in March, and they will authorize the funds so city can have the funds in the bank so they can start construction. My understanding is that on February the 8th, the city council has already adopted or approved its contract, right? Yeah, with the bidder, with the lowest bidder. So once the funds become available, they can start construction. So basically we're helping the City of Savannah to program some additional funds even if the majority of the funds do come from the city of Savannah, but will be used some of the MPO funds, MPO controlled funds. Any questions on this? Actually, I think Joe's here. Michelle is there. I think Kayla is there. So all three of them can help you sort out all the details if you have any questions on this.
All right, seeing as there are no questions, can we move to recommend?
Move to approve.
Second.
All right, can we start the voting to the right?
Yes.
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 Okay, thank you.
And then our next action item is the fiscal year 2025 UPWP adoption.
Okay, I presented the preliminary draft UPWP back in December. So after that, we sent the preliminary draft to Federal Highway and FTA and GDOT for review and comments. And we did receive some comments. And in the meantime, we also received some updated information. So I'm just going to outline this. And then we also need to have the second round of discussion for the unfunded studies because we might pursue funds in September for some of those studies. So I would just go over what has changed. So for those new members, the UPWP Unified Planning Work Program is the staff work program. Basically, it's our budget. So it details what staff does, what staff does, what kind of work, and how much money we allocate to each task. So we actually have three funding sources from highway planning, PL, and then Y410 is set aside from the PL, and then section 53, and that's for the transit planning. So the local match, PL, Y410, and section 53 all require local match. So the local match will come from our membership dues, but for the, normally it's like 20%. For the section 5303, Georgia DOT actually pays 10%. So the membership dues covers the other 10%. And the funds can only be used for planning. And if we don't spend the funds, and we just don't obligate those funds, and those funds will be put into a account, like pooled account by GDOT, and then we can apply for additional funds if we need, like we want to have some studies. I will talk about those studies in a minute. So we can apply for those additional funds. So these are some of the updates. Actually, last week we received the updated funding amount from GDOT. So for the highway planning funds, and the federal portion now has increased about $8,000. So now it's like $444,000, and the total under PL is $555,000. And for the Y410 grant, we about $300 short. So PL is $8,000 more, and the Y410 is $300 short. So you can see these are updated numbers. And the Section 5303 funds don't change. So the total is still $236,000. And the major task, there are some changes because we will, for the next fiscal year, we will still focus on the 2050 MTP-related updates and also the Title VI Plan Participation Plan updates. But we instead of, or in addition to maintenance update of the current TIP, we want to research on the e-TIP because currently we have something called interactive TIP on our website. It's a database. You can do project search, like by project sponsors or by fiscal years. You can see which projects listed. But we got notification from the provider, DTS Solutions. They are no longer supporting this. So we want to research and get a new software and also not only help us to disseminate information about projects, but we also, you know, occasionally we do call for projects. And currently we have this menu, we advertise the menu, and then we post everything on the website, and then we send the Excel spreadsheet for the TCC members to rank that and come back. So we want to probably in this new tool, we want people to just submit everything online. It will be automatically in the database. So when TCC members rank those, you can just rank from the database. So that is something that this is an opportunity for us to do that. So we want to explore the new ETIP. So I added that one in. We will still go over the federal certification review, because if we don't get certified, the Savannah region wouldn't receive $1. So we have to make sure. And the performance-based planning programming, we added a new program as the greenhouse gas emission, because GDOT was supposed to adopt the initial targets on February the 1st, but it got delayed. So it will be adopted at the end of March. So that means we will adopt the greenhouse gas emission targets as part of our 2050 plan. So I documented all of that into the UPWP. So based on this new budget, with updated numbers, the additional funds, like I said, $8,000, I added all that into administration just because of the certification review. So the total budget for the MPO operation is about $802,000. Other updates, City of Savannah, I know City of Savannah and GDOT are advertising for the I-60X ramp removal IMR update. So once we receive that information, we might include additional information in the UPWP. For the three Chatham County studies, because now we know who are the consultants and then the schedules, so we actually added in the consultant information for all three studies and also the schedules for all three studies as well. So these you will see. And the CAT studies, if CAT has the information on the schedule, please send us to us as well, so we can insert the UPWP. And then unfunded studies, last time we did talk about the regional truck parking study, resilience improvement plan, that was first round discussion, and urban flooding model study phase two, and Islands Expressway and the US 80 corridor study, and the CAT transit and development study, bus stop amenity study, mobility hub study, and bus rapid transit. But last time you saw all the other like black text over here, but you didn't see the language, because at that time the bike pedestrian plan implementation 2 was still being drafted by Kayla actually actively, and then the US 80 corridor study was being drafted by Tim. But just want to let you know that now we do include that information, the scope and the cost estimate into the revised draft UPWP, but we still need to discuss more about those. And then other update, Bryan County sent us a letter, actually sent a letter to Melanie and also to the MPO chairman, indicating they don't want to be a part of the MPO. Because the MPO board adopt the new boundary that includes all of Bryan County except Fort Stewart. And they actually sent the letters, no, we don't want to be a part of you. So we have to explore different scenarios on how to accommodate Bryan County. The thing is, we have no choice, and they cannot back out, because more than 10,000 people live within Savannah urban area. So those areas have to be included as part of the MPO. That's the federal law. So Bryan County cannot map out, cannot get out. But what we did is Asia actually worked on this, created three scenarios, and we presented the three scenarios to them, and then they selected scenario one. So we do have an action, not action item, status report. I will just show you that when we go to that status report. But right now, I just want to let you know, in the UPWP, the Cornpeel planning boundary has been updated. And the financial information I already talked to you about, task one, task two. And then FHWA and general comments have been incorporated as well. FHWA wants us to have like show the correlation between the federal requirements and MPO planning tasks. We actually have the federal requirements, and underneath that we have the MPO planning task in the table, showing the table which task addresses which emphasis area. So we just need to add a link, like a title. See, this shows the correlation. And they also want us to add the non-voting member in the roster. So we did add that. And also, the voting members also changed, like Nathan replaced Les Fasso. So there are other changes as well. I just want to let you know. And they also want to update the staff members. So for example, under task like a Y410 non-motorized transportation plan, we still have executive director, director of transportation, but mostly the time will be charged by Asia. So we just deleted all the other staff members. So Asia will be the only one to charge to it. And also they want us to add language regarding the greenhouse gas emission performance targets. So we are hoping to have the UPWP approved by the Corn Bureau Board in February. And then after that, we will send this to FHW, FDA, GDOT for final approval. And then we can start from there with the contract. And now let's just go to the document itself, because we do need to have the second round of discussions on the unfunded studies. So if you go to this revised draft, you can see everything over here that's highlighted in red that has been updated. So like Mayor Fuller, they have a new mayor. Pam Oglesby has resigned from ACAP, so we need to have we're going to have an election in 1 week. So we'll have I have to update this again. Richmond Hill, so this is the MPO board, and so Les Fossil will no longer be voting for Richmond Hill. Steve Scholar will. And Tybee Island, their previous city manager resigned, so their new mayor probably will be attending the meeting. So you will see all these has been updated. So if you see anything over here that is not right, please let us know, because we will not finalize this until February 28th. So if you see any of this, I mean, are you going to replace a Jim for?
No, I'm just filling in for him today, but his title has changed.
Okay.
He's the Assistant Director of Engineering.
Yeah. So after this meeting, take a look at this, highlighted this, and if you see anything that is wrong, please let me know, because I am going to update this between now and February 28th. So by the time we present everything to the MPO board, everything should be corrected. So if you see anything wrong over here, just let me know. So we added in the non-voting members, the Corn Bureau Board and the Technical Coordinating Committee, both have non-voting members. So we added this over here. Sean Brandon's title, I think, changed right as well, right? Because I have Parking and Mobility Service Administrator.
No, I think they're still Parking and Mobility Services.
Okay.
We're Transportation Services now.
Okay. Yeah, just make sure you take a look at this. Okay, we also added in, cause Karen is our new administrative assistant. So Karen will be, doing all the minutes and then the reimbursement. So she's a part of the team. So we added Karen. Oh. What did I do? Okay, the boundary, because by the time I submitted this agenda item, we haven't received the response from Bryan County yet on the boundary. So that's why I just highlighted, I have a note over here that this map will be updated. So now we have the MPO Bryan County boundary. So I will just replace that information. So just read through this. So everything that is highlighted in red is the one that has been updated since December. So now let's just move on to the unfunded studies. Let me just because we have to go over like two rounds of discussion before we submit any funding applications. Okay, so you can see the schedules have been inserted. So regional freight truck parking study, this is a recommendation from the Corn PO's freight transportation plan that was completed last October. And we estimate the cost is about $200,000 because the ARC actually did a freight parking study and their cost is about $300,000, and their area is much, much larger than ours. So I talked about what we want to do for this at the last meeting. Do you have any questions on this, what we want to do for the truck parking study or the cost estimate? Any discussion, any questions and comments on this? Okay. And then I would just move on to the next one. The resiliency improvement plan. Anna will be in charge of this. In this plan, we are actually still thinking about Northern Bryan County, probably included in our study area, but now they are backing out. So we think we need to at least include the Southern Bryan County, because when I present three scenarios, you will see the scenario one, scenario two actually cut out, like roadways in the middle of it. So, I mean, for a fuller picture, you probably want to just study the whole area. So we will probably revise the language a little bit over here just to reflect that on the resilience improvement plan. But I think the cost still is about right, $150,000. Any questions on this one? Okay, and the next one, the urban flooding model. We completed the phase one that covers Chatham County. So phase two, we plan to cover a three county area, but now it will be like southern half of Effingham County and the southern half of Bryan County as well. So we'll probably revise the language a little bit just to make sure that is the case. And so we estimate the cost of about $150,000. So actually, before September, we submit any applications, we will bring this all back to you. So TCC probably can help us decide which ones that we want to apply for funds for, because currently we have more than five. Normally, I think the Georgia PL Funds Review Committee probably wouldn't give all of that funds to one MPO. So I think we might be more successful if we apply for two or three studies. So
I had a question, Wakota, on the resilience study. Sorry. How does that one differ from the vulnerability study? And I guess what are the difference in focus between the two?
Anna. Thank you for that question, Anna McCory, staff planner. So a vulnerability assessment, which I'll give a presentation on that for those who haven't been involved in it yet later in this meeting. But a vulnerability assessment is deciding what transportation assets are vulnerable. So essentially we're looking at like roads, rail lines, bridges, but a resiliency improvement plan then takes a vulnerability assessment one step further. So it's the second half of that to say, okay, we're deciding what's vulnerable. How are we then going to protect it? What do we need to be able to be more resilient? So to be able to bounce back from climate stressors and hazards. And the Protect Grant Program, I believe the funding cycle will come around again this summer. They have an option to apply for a grant to create a resiliency improvement plan. So it's really the second half of it of, okay, we've determined what the problem is. What are the solutions?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we will move on to the next one. And this bicycle and pedestrian facility study, and this is the one that we talked about, but we didn't have information last time. And so basically, the MPO, by the end of June, we should have a non-motorized transportation plan. So what we want to do is how to implement non-motorized transportation plan. So I think Kayla might talk more about this. So we want to at least do an inventory, because like conditions of the bike pad.
Yeah, so this kind of came out of the non-motorized planning meetings that we've been having, and every time we go and update the non-motorized plan, we spend, Asia, what, like probably 6 to 8 months just figuring out what facilities have been built and where they are built and the condition of existing facilities and if they need to be updated. And there really isn't a central repository for all of this information, as well as a way to update it in the future and have more ongoing updates so we're not reinventing the wheel every time. There are also additional qualifiers that we, you know, have changed over the past 10 years, whether it's Justice 40, socially disadvantaged, the social determinants of health, looking at different economic development opportunities, you know, various things like that. And so this particular facility is kind of two or threefold. One part of it is really looking at existing facility conditions where have a stopgap analysis where we really need to prioritize that investment, whether it's because those are job centers that people can get to or access to public transportation, or the economic development benefits. Then looking at a model where we can have those ongoing updates submitted directly to the MPO. So that would kind of go hand in hand with the stakeholder committee that has been identified as a priority within the bylaws update, just to help keep that information current. So the MPO can point out relevant opportunities. We as, you know, agencies can look for those opportunities to connect and really work together on it. And then just kind of create an overall plan that all of the municipalities can refer to rather than, you know, everybody just having their own individual versions.
So is one of the primary goals of this asset collection then?
Yeah, okay. That's one of them. Okay. But in addition to just the asset collection, you know, with the city of Savannah and the robotics study or survey that was completed, you know, we really don't have an overall kind of level of quality of our bicycle and pedestrian facilities. We may know where the sidewalks are located and where a bike lane is located, but they vary wildly in their condition. And so that would also be part of this asset mapping.
Thanks.
Yeah, and also a tool to track the implementation of projects. That's what we want to accomplish with this. Any more questions on this? For the outlying areas like Richmond Hill and Effingham County, because we might have more information for the city of Savannah, so we might not have the information for Grant County and Effingham County. So we will collect information on those areas, expanded areas as well.
My apologies. We are gathering some information on that now.
Okay.
The SS4A study. So.
Okay, great. Thank you. So currently we estimate the project cost for this one is around $150,000. But by the time that we decide if we do want to pursue this study, we will reevaluate and probably fine-tune the scope before we submit the applications. And then the next one, the US 80 corridor study, because we actually finished the phase one, because that's goes from I-516 all the way to the Chatham County, Effingham County county line for the US 80 corridor study, completed by Kimberly Horn. At that time, Effingham County is not part of the Corn PO, so we cannot spend our money in Effingham County, but Effingham County will become part of MPO. So we will be able to probably apply for the funds on behalf of our member agencies. But we do need to, last time I think we talked about probably go all the way from Chatham County, Effingham County, county line to all the way to US 280. But now it seems like that's not possible because Bryan County backed out. So I think, the limit will be changed probably from Effingham County, Chatham County county line to Effingham County and Bryan County county line. So that means the cost probably will be changed as well. Currently, we estimate the cost will be about $265,000, but that covers, if we reduce the length by half, I think probably this will become like $150,000, I think, maybe.
I don't think it's that much of a distance between the bridge and 280, so I don't know if it'll take that much off, but and it's also undeveloped, so I don't think you'll see that much of a difference on it, but you may.
Okay. So if you decide to revise this number, please send it to me before the Cornpeel board meeting.
Yeah, and I reached out to have them do that this morning.
Yeah. Yeah. So if Bryan County decides to jump in or, I mean, to work with us, but they the only difference is they just have to cough up with their own money. So that's the difference. So we can come up with our portion of the money, but they have to come up with their own. So that's the difference. So Chatham County, last time we talked about Chatham County still wants to pursue the Islands Expressway just in case that we still want some improvements over there. And CAD actually provided this transit all this project description and estimates. Even if the funds that we are going to apply for is highway planning funds, but some of the funds can be used for transit planning as well. So we will just leave all these over there just in case we need to apply for that funds. So the transit-oriented development study, transit stop amenities, and mobility hub and bus rapid transit facility.
Yeah, and I'll just point out on the transit bus stop amenities program, we've already started the inventory, so that kind of phase one approach. So, you know, any studies, I think, kind of go with what Kayla was talking about with the connectivity. So we know the bus stop is kind of that first spot for the transit trip, but we want to make sure that it's connecting to something. So looking at just the actual amenity itself, but then also the connectivity of the stop to other areas as well. So that's, you know, I think it's described in the scope, but just in case there was any confusion.
Okay. We will probably come back, I think, in August or in June if we decide to come back to you on any of these studies we recommend for the funding application. We will come back to you at the time. So, but right now, do you have any more questions on these studies? Okay. If not, we will request the TCC endorse the proposed revised UPWP. With the condition that it will send me all the corrections, yeah, your titles and cost estimates, limits and everything. Okay.
So yes, can we get a motion to endorse pending informational changes? And if before you motion or second, can you please state your name for the record?
Carolyn, and make a motion to approve.
Vanessa, the second.
All right, we'll start the vote to the left.
Count in, yes.
Vanessa P, yes.
Michelle Strickland, yes.
Deanna Brooks, yes.
Kayla Brown, yes.
Mary Moskowitz, yes.
Clark, yes.
Heath Means, yes.
Thank you.
Melanie Wilson, yes.
Thanks, Melanie.
I was on the computer in my office, but I thought I would at least vote in person. Hi, everybody.
All right, so we will move on to our other business. Would you like me to read this into?
Yeah, do you want to? Yeah, because you have to sign it.
Okay, yeah. All right, so this is a resolution to recognize and appreciate Chairman Les Fussell for his service to the CORE MPO Technical Coordinating Committee. Whereas the Coastal Region Metropolitan Planning Organization is responsible for maintaining a comprehensive, cooperative, and continuing multi-agency regional transportation planning process, and whereas transportation planning is a complex process involving multiple parties, necessitating the creation of the Technical Coordinating Committee to oversee this process, and whereas Chairman Les Fussell was unanimously elected to serve as the chair of the TCC in 2023, and whereas Chairman Fussell served this committee with excellence and precision, ensuring the complicated and moving parts of the transportation planning process were well coordinated. And whereas the CORE MPO staff and TCC members are highly thankful for Chairman Fussell for his leadership. And whereas we all wish Chairman Fussell well in his future endeavors. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the CORE MPO Technical Coordinating Committee adopts this resolution to graciously thank Chairman Fussell for his service.
Okay, so after we get the resolution signed, and we will mail the resolution to the former Chairman Fussell.
And we'll make sure that it's in a really nice frame that's tricked out.
And then the next item is the 2050 MTP update.
Okay, I will just give a quick status report, and then Anna and the Hapti from GDOT will give the presentation. So basically, just want to let you know where we are. Hapti is going to give the presentation on the travel demand model, contributing plans, and Asia is going to give you a presentation on the non-motorized transportation plan later. And the congestion management, we have a preliminary draft ready for your review. Resiliency planning, Anna is going to give a presentation on that. And we already talked about the greenhouse gas emission targets. And then financial plan development. Since we have the new boundary now, GDOT will work on the revenue projections for us. And then we will start the prioritization process. And I will ask you for your input on the prioritization process as well. And we have a free framework for the 2050 MTP report. So we are working on different elements and chapters just as the information becomes available. So we don't have to wait until the last minute to work on that. So now I think the first thing we would just, I will ask it. Oh, hold on. Hapti, maybe, okay. Hapti or Anna is going to do the presentation. Okay, Anna, you want to go first?
Hi, I'm Macquarie, staff planner here with the Core MPM. I wanted to give a quick update on the resilient planning for our 2050 chapter. So the resilience chapter, why are we doing this? Essentially, we're required to do it. And it's part of the MPO process, but it's really important in a lot of different ways. And so essentially, why we're doing this, so we want to better understand how we can improve the resiliency and reliability of the transportation system and reduce or mitigate stormwater impacts of surface transportation. And we want to reduce the vulnerability of the existing transportation infrastructure to natural disasters. So there's a couple FHWA resources and directives that we're following here. This is going to be quite an expansion of the 2045 MTP resilience section, which is a little bit smaller. And so get into it. So some chapter topics, just a resilience overview. What is it? Impacts from climate change, natural hazards, man-made threats. Today, I'm going to be focusing on the vulnerability assessment and some information about energy and emissions reductions. In the chapter, there will also be some information about wildlife corridors, biodiversity, in relevant local and state plans and studies that exist that we can start to incorporate, and then also information on green and nature-based design and infrastructure. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the Federal Highway Administration Greenhouse Gas Performance Final Measure Final Rule. So this was published in December of 2023 and effective as of January 8th. This final rule amends FHWA's regulations governing national performance management measures and establishes a method for the measurement and reporting of greenhouse gas emissions associated with transportation. What this does, it requires state departments of transportation and metropolitan planning organizations to establish declining carbon dioxide targets for the greenhouse gas measure and to report on progress toward the achievement of those targets. So essentially, state DOTs and MPOs need to have targets that aim to reduce emissions over time, but there's no set reduction amount. You just have to essentially show progress that you're reducing your emissions over time. Originally, the state DOT submission date for the plan was due on February 1st. However, the deadline for enforcement is now March 29th of this year. And that's due to some federal court challenges. And so MPOs, once the state submits their plan, we have 180 days to set our targets. All right. So these are a few slides from GDOT. Just they haven't released their plan yet. However, they did have a meeting with MPOs, and there were some helpful slides. And so what are parameters that impact this greenhouse gas measure? So vehicle miles traveled, mode share, fleet composition, fuel efficiency. So these are some of the things that GDOT is going to be looking at. And then I think that MPOs as well are going to be thinking about. All right. So again, from GDOT, our MPO requirements, so this is what we have to do, establish decline for your target for our planning area. It's due 180 days after the state DOT sets their targets. And then that third requirement doesn't apply to us, but there's some information if MPOs overlap. Here we have a slide. This has changed. Again, this has changed a little bit due to those court cases. However, this was from an earlier January presentation from GDOT, just so you can get an idea of the schedule. Some of these dates have changed. So reports are due early this year, and then MPO targets are due, and then this will have to be updated over time. So you'll have some time for analysis and then reporting. And why are we talking about greenhouse gas emissions? Why is this important? So transportation remains the largest source of emissions in the U.S., with cars and light-duty trucks as the largest contributors. So it's really, really important that we start thinking about greenhouse gas emissions. And so this rise in greenhouse gas emissions from transportation is mainly attributed to an increase in vehicle miles traveled by passenger cars and all truck types. So even though we may be having more efficient vehicles, we're traveling further distances. And so some of these things start to cancel each other out. It's very important. And what are some benefits of mitigation and resilience? So decarbonizing transportation could save money, improve air quality, social equity, and the health of people and ecosystems. And this happens in a variety of ways. There's just not one solution. It could be through more bike and pedestrian planning. It could be through investment in oyster reefs that can reduce wave energy, protect shorelines and coastal roadways. So there's really a lot of things on the spectrum for mitigation and resilience. And these figures are from the 5th National Climate Assessment. All right, so I'm going to jump into the vulnerability assessment that is ongoing right now. All right, and so just a point of why we're doing this, the 5th National Climate Assessment in their transportation chapter says that, you know, there are lots of tools and guidelines to help organizations plan for the impacts of climate change. And some examples are the Federal Highway Administration Vulnerability Assessment and Adaptation Framework and the USDOT's Vulnerability Assessment Scoring Tool. And we are actually using these. So it's great to see this alignment within the National Climate Assessment, DOT, FHWA, and then here we are locally on the ground as an MPO. Why do we need to do this? We want to prepare for changes in climate and extreme weather. It's going to help to identify where we can invest limited resources. It's a quantifiable way to prioritize transportation projects based on resilience. And it may be a potential precursor to a resilience improvement plan. And the way that vulnerability is defined here is by three factors: exposure, sensitivity, and adaptive capacity. So essentially, will you experience a hazard? How will you experience that hazard, and are you able to cope with that hazard? All right. And so following along with FHWA's Vulnerability Assessment and Adaptation Framework, they have several stages, so setting objectives and defining your scope, compiling data, assessing the vulnerability, analyzing your options, and incorporating your results into decision-making. So essentially what we're doing here, creating an assessment team, defining our objectives, using the VAST tool to help understand the vulnerability, and then hopefully this will go into MCP project prioritization. The vulnerability assessment scoring tool, it's an indicator-based approach. So you can see here it breaks things down into steps down so that it's easy to follow. It's all based in an Excel macro spreadsheet, but it requires quite a bit of input and data to go through these steps. These steps look a little bit simple here, but it's all going to take a lot of input. And so that input is guided by our assessment team. And so our assessment team has met twice now, first to start defining our objectives and talking about some of our exposure indicators and climate hazards that we're interested in exploring. So we have representatives from Bryan, Chatham, and Effingham County, the City of Savannah, Tybee Island, Core MPO in Sages, FHWA, GDOT, in UGA. If you know anybody that you would like to be involved, please follow up with me, but or maybe reaching out to you in the future for some more information. So what are our assessment objectives? They're to understand the vulnerability of the MPO's transportation system at a macro level, to changes in temperature, precipitation, sea level rise, storm surge, and wind, and also to investigate how the transportation system is contributing to vulnerability of transit assets and how improvements can be made. We're focusing on climate stressors, temperature, precipitation, sea level rise, storm surge, and wind. And our transit assets that we're going to be looking at for this assessment are roads, so collectors and above, bridges, ports, airports, and rail lines. Again, talking about that exposure indicator. So what thinking about our climate hazards, we're going to be using data from our flood modeling tool study, which was completed by UGA late last year. There's some LIDAR data, FEMA flood zone data, the National Hurricane Center storm surge risk maps, the climate mapping for resilience and adaptation, our CAMRA, Climate Explorer and Coastal Management Program online mapping tool. So there's quite a bit of data out there, and that's right, really what I'm currently sorting through now based on input from our assessment team, input and help. So just as an example, this is the CAMRA tool output. So if we're to look at extreme heat, what is an exposure indicator? An exposure indicator might be annual days with maximum temperature above 95 degrees. And then this tool is really helpful because for our area, this is just showing Chatham County, but we can do it for our entire area. We can see that early century, you know, what's expected in a lower emissions or higher emissions scenario, mid-century, this is what we're focusing on for the 2050 plan, or late century. And so it has all these different what are called indicators to then describe how temperature can affect our area. So it's really giving some numbers to help us better understand our area and then understand the impact on our transportation system. And so late last year, I began meeting with FHWA and GDOT to determine if this is a good route for us. We had our first kickoff meeting in December. We just had a second meeting at the end of January, and we have our third meeting next week to continue this discussion of our exposure indicators and start talking about sensitivity and adaptive capacity. So with that, I'll end, and I'm happy to take any questions.
I have one. Back to the greenhouse gas.
Yes.
How do they actually measure, like, the greenhouse gases in the specific areas? Is it just based on, like, population or vehicle miles traveled, or?
I think we have Hopti on here from GDOT. He's going to give a presentation, so he might be able to give a little bit better explanation. I cannot give you a great explanation right now. I will say this is slightly out of my wheelhouse at the moment. And so I'm really looking forward to learning about what GDOT is doing and how they're going to do it. And then maybe we can base our targets after off of theirs.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. Thank you all so much. If you would like to be involved, please let me know or you have thoughts.
Is Hapti on? Okay.
Hapti, yes, is going. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So I don't have access to share my screen. So if you can share the screen and I will ask you to flip it, that would be great.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Just tell me when to show the next page.
Okay. We'll do. Okay. That's good. Okay. Thank you. That's just the, regarding the previous presentation about greenhouse gas, once GDOT establishes the target, we'll have an opportunity to come and present what those targets are. Since the clock for the MPO, target setting starts after establishing the state target, so we'll have an opportunity to come and present. But regarding the specific question, technical question, the slide that was shared at the end of, you know, before this presentation was kind of, those are the drivers of the greenhouse gas emission, basically the VMT, and obviously with the VMT comes from the population, but also the fleet of the vehicles, basically what percentage of the electric vehicles are in the state, and also, you know, what proportion of the total VMTs by trucks and passenger vehicles. There's a lot of technical stuff that really determines, but obviously the what we have been provided so far from Federal Highway is through ASHTO tool. They give us the VMT, which is reported by state, and also we're given the total fuels consumed in the state, and also the factor for different type of, you know, gas, for regular gas and also for diesel. There are different factors. So that combination gives you the total emission, greenhouse gas emission. And so that's basically what we're trying to kind of, you know, get into, a lot of scenario analysis before we establish the target. So at some point, probably sometime next month, we'll have an opportunity to show you what the targets are and the report, and pretty much everything we'll be sharing with. If you don't have an opportunity to come in and present it to you, we obviously share the document and the reports through the GAMPO distribution. So I'm here today to present about the travel demand model. The travel demand model, you know, development is a very collaborative process between GDOT and the core MPO staff. I really want to thank you, ICODA, for and your staff for working with GDOT and our consultants from the very early stage of the model development process. And I'll be covering some of those collaborative efforts in my presentation, but you're looking at this presentation at the tail end, but it requires a lot of technical stuff and a lot of coordination. Basically, GDOT develops and maintains most of the state's MPO travel demand models to assist developing a tool for your MTP development. Basically, we come here every plan update cycle. Next slide, please, Wakoda.
So this
slide is nothing new for you. This is just basically we're trying to remind you about the federal regulations that requires, you know, MTP update every 5 years. Obviously, your plan update is about 6 months, as it's August 23, 2024. And then kind of, you know, focusing, why are we even doing travel demand model? You know, basically MAP 21 and FAST Act requires incorporating performance-based planning, and how do you do the performance-based planning for transportation system access and project prioritization, project selection? What do you do? If you go to the next slide, Rekoda. So we're putting here the 23 CFR that shows the Metropolitan Planning Organization should adopt an MTP, develop MTP, a 20 plan horizon. And also that the plan should address current and future transportation demand. How do you do, or how do you get the future transportation demand? So if you go to the next slide, the travel demand model, you know, basically is a set of mathematical equations and relationships using a set of inputs. And we're going to be talking about those inputs. Observe it, you know, current conditions, some future assumptions, and modeling platform, which is basically a software to forecast future demand. A travel demand model is among the tool critical in the tasks and the tools of transportation planning and policy analysis, because it basically provides factual support when we suggest or analyze a policy or a program through different scenarios. And we're going to be talking about those different scenarios. So the travel demand model, we have a traditional four-step travel demand model, which consists of trip generation that tells you how many trips are generated in each and every household, how many trips are distributed among, you know, different destinations, whether it's a work trip or not. And then there is a mode choice that tells you by what mode that trip is being completed, and then a traffic assignment showing what route will all of those, you know, trips use. So this is basically the traditional travel demand model process, the four-step model that's kind of we are using. So if you go to the next slide, This is basically showing the core NPO boundary and the modeling area. I know where Koda presented about the NPO boundary regarding the Bryan County and Effingham County, but so the travel does not necessarily step at the NPO boundary. It goes beyond that. So even though it shows like the green or the darker, boundary is the NPO boundary, but the rest is kind of the planning, the traveling modeling boundary. So we're trying to capture all trips that come in and out of the study area being the Savannah NPO or the core NPO. Next slide, please. So what has been done since the last, and it's been at least 4 years, maybe 3.5 years since I last came and presented the model. But if you look at it, as I said in the beginning, it's a very collaborative process. If you look at the green, colors, the prepared socioeconomic data, basically, WICODA and their staff prepared zonal socioeconomic data. And then they also provided the 2015, the do-nothing scenario project list provided by the NPO again. So there has been a lot of activity. We reviewed and update traffic analysis zones to make sure that they're aligned with the census boundary. We also updated the trip rates based on the 2017 National Solid Travel Survey data. The department spent $1.75 million to purchase an add-on for a National Solid Travel Survey. Basically, that would support us to do trip rates for specifically to the NPOs. In the past, there was like close to 18, 19 years old survey that was conducted in Augusta. That's what I've been using. But after we started using this NHS data, 2017 for each individual NPO, the modeling and calibration process has been very good, and you will see those results in the next few slides. Next, please.
Freeze.
Okay. So I told you that, the model has a lot of inputs and a lot of outputs. One of the inputs is the 2020 roadway network. This is the functionally classified roadway network, again, reviewed by NPO and GDOT together. This is basically shows the, this slide shows the NPO boundary, the modeling area, and also the functional classification roads from interstate all the way to locals. We have very few local roads, but, for east-west or north-south connectivity, we sometimes add local roads. But otherwise, minor collectors and above are included usually in the model. Next slide, please. Another input is the traffic analysis zones. Traffic analysis zone is the smallest unit of a boundary within any modeling area that kind of, tracks the trip movement. Every, demographic and employment information is kind of, summarized into these traffic analysis zones. It is usually kind of advisable or kind of required to have a similar land use plan in each of traffic analysis zones. As you can see, the traffic analysis zones are dense in the central Savannah CBD, and then as you go out to the outer part of the NPO boundary or even the modeling area, you will see bigger boundaries, bigger traffic analysis zones, signifying the a lot of human and vehicular activity in the CBD as opposed to the outer part of the modeling area. Next slide, please. So how are the trails and roads represented in the model? This is basically to show you, this is a little bit more technical. If there is a TAS or a traffic analysis zone, those are the primary units for travel demand model, representing, similar land use, similar socioeconomic characteristics, similar income, and similar of everything pretty much. And then you have the kind of, orange color nodes. So those are basically TAS centroids. Nodes and centroids, those are the central points of any traffic analysis zone. Every, demographic information, employment information, the school enrollment, and all of it is summarized into a traffic analysis zone and further simplified into a single node, which is called TAS centroid. So you have also centroid connectors. Those are, for the most part, those are imaginary lines that load traffic from traffic analysis zone into the network. So the network links are basically where the transportation network, the region's streets basically from local roads all the way to interstate, the network links are basically in the mud area. So this is just a small visual of how traffic analysis zones, centroid, and centroid connectors and nodes are represented in the mud. Next slide, please. So again, the MPO staff provided the socioeconomic data for 2020 base year and also the 2050 plan year. So I'm not going to say much about this. You know, we see a similar growth between 2020, 2050 across all the attributes of the population, the household employment, and the total student enrollment from K-12 and also the university enrollment. It is across the board 52%. So this is again provided by the MPO staff and reviewed by, you know, GDOT. We had, you know, a few comments. Those comments were addressed and then we were comfortable to use it for travel demand model. Next slide, please. So, go back. Okay. No, you're good. So, so we have the inputs. We have the model inputs. Once the model inputs are done, then we do travel demand model. Basically, the stuff that I said in the beginning, the travel model development is kind of, you know, process where, you have a lot of inputs and then a lot of mathematical equations, relationships. Once the software speeds up the output, so before even we call it, this is a model and this is what we have to use, we do so through a lot of validation process. One of the validation process is, the 2020 model validation or model area roadway mileage and functional classification that we usually get from the 445 report, which is the GDOT HPMS report. So as you can see, the variability difference between the model and the observed is really, very minimum compared to the recommended validation process. Next slide. So here is another validation, how we validate it. It's called the model route mean square error. Federal Highway or the Travel Demand Model Improvement, Travel Model Improvement Guide recommends R squared of 0.88, but our model, which is the Savannah model, is a higher, clarity, higher validation, measure. It's 0.94. If you see the 45 angle line, if every blue point is on that line, that is basically a golden city. That means that, not 0.9, but it will be 1. And that I never seen in my life every little point, every dot being on that 45 angle line. So I think I'm pretty comfortable looking at previous models, whether it is for Savannah MPO or other 13 MPOs. And also, outside of even Georgia, I think 0.94 root mean square, I can't talk today. Root mean square is pretty tight model. Next slide, please. And this is another model validation. If you see all the points are within the curve, the upper bound and the lower bound, that means, again, it kind of talks back to that 45-degree angle that I showed you. But as you can see, the higher traffic volume, the higher traffic counts are within that range, meaning the model is performing very well. If you look at on the x-axis, there are some lines, there are some dots outside of the boundary, but that is kind of not typical for a smaller volume, traffic volume. It's always, reasonable to expect some deviation from the model. So this is basically the deviation between the model versus the traffic count. Next slide, please.
Habsi, we have quite a few items on the agenda left, and I see you have quite a few slides to get through. Can we try to get to the meat of this within the next 5 minutes, please?
Sure, I will do that. Okay, next slide, please. Let's just keep the model validation. This is too technical anyway. Can you go to the next slide, please?
Do you want to show the results?
Yeah, just the results. Screen line, cut line, these are all technical. I send you you have the presentation, so if anyone is interested, you can show them. So okay. This is the, okay, go back. One more slide. Okay, so now we have the validation process finished. This is the 2020 daily traffic volumes. As you can see, a lot of the traffics are carried by the higher functional classification, or the usual suspects are showing. It's basically the volume boundaries. The thicker the color, the darker the color, then that means a lot of traffic are, you know, it's accommodating a lot of traffic volume. Next slide, please. So once we get all of that, using the highway capacity level of service methodology, we kind of, you know, come up with a level of service map. Next slide, please. So this is the 2020 daily level of service. Again, you know, since you live in the area, you know what areas are really congested. And this basically shows, based on the information provided, and this is validated and calibrated using 2020 traffic count. So this is basically what it is now, 2020 level of service. The level of service is basically the model daily traffic divided by the daily capacity of the model. And then you can go to the next slide. Keep going.
2050.
Yeah, okay. So 2050 MTP scenarios are, there are five scenarios, the do nothing that I'm just covering up now, existing plus committed, completion of the STIP and the TIP system projects, and then the FIS network going to be just the total, you know, MTP projects, just basically the wish list until you become to the financially constrained plan. Next slide, please. So this is the 2050, the do nothing total daily traffic volume. Again, the usual suspects are still appearing, I-16, I-95, and all of those higher functional classification roads are carrying the majority of the traffic volume. Next slide, please. And this is the 2050 do nothing daily level of service. So this is a very important network. It shows if you don't do anything at all, with the exception of the projects that are coded in the network, only a couple of them, maybe three projects, with the exception of that, if you don't do anything, what would be in the 2050? What should we expect? Basically, how we can accommodate the future demand being the 2050. So you can go to the next slide. And you know, these are all technical. Given the time now, I wouldn't go through that. These are showing the VMT by different facility type. You can go to the next slide. Go to the next slide. We can skip that. Okay, this is very important. So daily daily vehicle miles traveled, VMT by level of service. As you can see, in the 2020 network, only 4% of the traffic volume, the VMT, was served by level of service F. In 2050, if you don't do anything, 40% of the VMT would be serving by level of service F. This is a significant impact. Next slide. And so I think the next step is, Wycoda, you know, we've been communicated with you and staff multiple times. So we're going to be, you know, expecting the remaining project list for the remaining scenarios. And then we provide a level of service map and any other technical, you know, technical product that's needed for your MTP update. I think that's all I have.
Okay, just want the GCC know that we did submit the existing plus committed projects list to GDOT, so that next step is to model the E plus C model, and then we will submit the FORCE network as well. So FORCE network would be include all the projects, all the capacity projects in the TIP that have right-of-way and right-of-way and preliminary engineering programmed. The E plus C committed is the with construction programmed. Just want to let
correct.
You know that. Sorry.
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions for Hapti? Okay. Thanks, Hapti.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. The third part that we do want input from you is for the prioritization, project prioritization. Like I said, GDOT is going to provide us with the revenue projections, but we do want to start the project prioritization process. So this is our current approach. Just want to get your input on it. So we do have, say, we have a bunch of projects in the current 2045 plan, and they are divided into cost band 1, cost band 2, cost band 3. So some of the cost band 1 projects were already being implemented, like I-16 widening and US-17 bridge replacements. So those will be totally out of the 2050. But some of the remaining ones in cost band one, we want to maintain those as high priority projects, like Project Durain. It's still a high priority project. So we will automatically move those forward into the 2050 MTP as the cost band one project. And then we might have some new projects, and we cost band two projects and will be evaluated with other projects. I showed you the matrix last time, so that shows the study recommendations from STERA 21 Access Management Study, Freight Plan, STERA 307 Corridor Study, US 80 Corridor Study, and the congestion management. We are updating congestion management, and then also the travel demand model that the Haptic showed. You see that all the roadways light up like Christmas tree, all red. So we will add a column for that. So our approach is to just to do the first screening with the matrix. So just click. So if a project has a multiple track, so that will move on to the next stage. So currently I'm thinking maybe check five checks or six checks. And then we probably cannot accommodate all of those projects. Currently in the matrix, we have more than 180 projects. So I'm thinking maybe have the top 30 being evaluated, move on to the next stage. And then that will go through the three-tier screening process. And the first tier would be based on like system performance, like level of service over here, truck traffic, free connections, and crash rate, designated route, pedestrian bicycle injury crash, density, accessibility, like connecting population centers, et cetera, state of good repair, bridge ratings. So this is our first tier, just with all those probably 30 or 40 projects go through this. And the screen two, we want to focus on the environment. So it will have impacts to environmental cultural resources or noise pollution, climate change risks, and intergovernmental coordination. And this is very important because I think if a project is further along, it already has a right of way or something, it definitely will be a higher priority, because if it's just a starting or scoping phase, probably lower priority. So if you have construction already, that of higher priority, because we want to focus on the projects that are already in the pipeline. And screen three, we want to focus on equity. So these are just some of the criteria that we drafted over here. Connect underserved community destinations or transportation issues, use them cost, concentration of crashes or in certain geographical locations. So these are some of the criteria that we drafted, and we would like to get your input on this. This is the time I think I might ask the TCC, we might schedule separate meeting, or do you want to designate a subcommittee to just to work on this, to finalize, fine tune this criteria, because we will use this criteria to start a prioritization. And then when the revenue comes, and then we will match the revenue with these projects and have them allocated to cost but 1, 2, 3. So do you want to like work on this in a separate meeting? Because I know this meeting is pretty short.
Yeah, I think we can do a separate meeting for that.
Okay, just for the prioritization purposes?
Yeah.
Okay. So we will do that. But in the meantime, if you want to review, this is the very preliminary draft approach. So just take a look at this, and then we will have a further discussion on this. Okay.
Were there any questions on that?
Okay.
CMP update?
CMP update. Genesis was supposed to do the presentation, but her mother has a doctor appointment. So just want to let you know, we have the preliminary draft is available over here. Actually, this draft has gone through the internal staff review. So myself, Anna, and Asia, we have already provided comments, and Genesis incorporating those comments. So we would like the TCC input on this as well. So if you would like to review this project, just want to mention, I think chapter, she used some new information. So the findings, I think the findings are in section analysis of congestion mobility issues in section 9. And then the proposed solutions or congestion solutions in chapter 10. So if you just want to focus on those areas, so this would be the chapter that you just want to take a look at. Because the previous one is just introduction and what kind of a performance measures we want to use and what kind of data we want to use. But this is the results. So if you want to take a look at this, so identify some of the projects, still need some cleaning because Genesis is not very familiar with our area. Some of the projects are already implemented, like Grange Road. She's still listed over there. So we still need some cleaning over here. But just take a look at this and give us the feedback so that we can complete this congestion management process.
Okay, next item is the non-motorized transportation plan update.
Good afternoon, everyone. I will try to be brief in this status update. And I also wanted to welcome some of the new faces I'm seeing. Welcome to the team. It's great to have you here. So staff is continuing to work on the non-motorized transportation plan. And just to give background on it, this document addresses the development of bike and pedestrian infrastructure in the core MPO planning area. And the goal of the non-motorized transportation plan is to identify new projects, assess the needs of the community, and set new goals for bike and pedestrian infrastructure. So just to go into current activities, a lot of what has been done is centering on first identifying some of the projects that we would like to add to the plan. And this is just a map that roughly shows a lot of the projects that we've identified. I've actually identified a few more that aren't on this list, and so I'll have to provide an updated map for that. And in addition to that, a lot of the work has been centering on reviewing and updating the scoring criteria and methodology. So like the Metropolitan Transportation Plan, the non-motorized transportation plan also involves scoring and ranking projects, and it has its own set of rules for deciding how to assign a score to a specific project. So staff has been reviewing, making changes to the original scoring criteria for a few reasons. One, to add more equity measures to the methodology. Two, to make protected bike and pedestrian paths a higher priority. And also to account for shared use paths in which bike and pedestrian activities can occur on the same pathway. We also wanted to account for increased development in the Savannah area. So we know a lot of development is coming to this area, especially with Hyundai plant, and so we wanted to account for things like that. And then we also wanted to simplify the scoring process. So staff first met on this with some of the steering committee members in January to discuss possibly adding new things or updating the scoring methodology. And so we received some great feedback on that. And from this meeting, we drafted a new draft methodology. And again, this is a draft methodology. We've actually made more changes after another meeting. But we've retained a lot of what was originally within the original scoring methodology, which was created in 2014. And then we added some new measures, like we want to give points if it's protected by a barrier or if it's near Title VI school or if it adds safety upgrades to an existing project. Again, this is a draft, so this isn't final yet. And then for reference, this is the 2014 methodology. And there's one notable difference between that and the proposed new methodology is that there are actually two. So there's a separate criteria for scoring bike projects that are separate from scoring pedestrian projects. Whereas in this one, I kind of proposed just maybe having a merged one. Again, this is a draft. We could split them up and pursue a scoring methodology in which there's still a separated methodology for bike projects when compared to pedestrian projects. And so the steering committee actually met again recently this month in February, and it became clear that the old criteria has some measures that need updating. We can't avoid not updating the scoring criteria, and so we officially decided to do a major update of the scoring system. And the goal is to complete the scoring of projects by the end of May. So staff is trying really hard to finalize the updating of that criteria so we can get into scoring the projects. But we have identified some barriers to updating the scoring criteria. One is time. So we want this plan to be completed in June, specifically around June 20th. And we want all major products of the plan to be completed by around the end of May. And so with updating the scoring criteria, that means we have to not only score new projects, but also rescore all of the old projects in the 2014 plan. And so that will be scoring around 400 to 500 different projects, which is a lot. And so we're toying around with the idea of using GIS to aid in that process, and using spatial analysis such as buffers and proximity analysis to aid in the scoring of the project list for the non-motorized transportation plan. And so this item on the agenda was added as a discussion item. So if anyone actually has experience in using spatial analysis for this purpose, any advice would be great. So we do have meetings coming up with people that do have some of that GIS experience. But if anyone on the TCC or anyone in the audience kind of tuning in has that experience, your input would be great.
How many people score the projects? And I guess, does everyone score each project, or is there like teams and different people score different ones, or how does that work?
So I was under the assumption that the entire steering committee would be involved with scoring the projects, but in terms of using GIS, it probably wouldn't even need heavy involvement from everyone within the steering committee if GIS can do the work for us. But the steering committee will still have to decide on like what score should be applied to what and what we should care about most.
So I just say that I've been involved with these types of projects for other MPOs, and I definitely recommend using the GIS process and using spatial data. You know, we are human. We can make, you know, mathematical errors. It does speed up the process a lot, and then it also allows you to do that kind of tedious work almost simultaneously, you know, instantly. So you're not sitting there, you know, adding things up on a Excel spreadsheet or something like that.
Yeah.
So I would, but I would also recommend that you make sure that your data sources are correct and updated.
Mm-hmm.
Cause that is, you know, probably one of the most important things. And then that you document so that, you know, next year when you have to do this, you know where that information came from. So mm-hmm. the next time you have to do it, you can be like, this is where, you know, that metadata is very important. So.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other comments for Asia? Thank you.
Thank you.
The next item is the functional classification request.
Okay, at the December meeting, we adopted the GDOT proposed adjusted urban area, and the next step is to do the roadway functional classification. GDOT used to have a hard cap for each category, but now they have a soft cap. So it is time for us to submit information. So GDOT actually sent us the proposed, this is the procedure. Since you are all MPO members, so the MPO will be submitting the change request on behalf of you, but we need your coordination because the City of Savannah wants to upgrade Benton Boulevard. Because currently, what we do, Cornpeel allocates federal dollars. So if we cannot allocate federal dollars to local streets, so local streets are maintained by local agencies. Unless it is a bike path project, we can allocate federal dollars on bike path projects if it's local road. But we can only spend federal dollars for functional classified roadways. That means collectors, arterials, minor, major arterials, expressways, interstates. So if your streets is a currently classified as local, but needs to be upgraded to collectors or above to make sure it will receive federal dollars, this is the time to do it. Because currently, I know Benton Boulevard, City of Savannah wants to do it, to upgrade it, because it's not local road. It carries a lot of traffic, and then it connects to, basically connects to the major roadways, like I-95 fit into that, Puller Parkway, so at least a collector. Thunderbolt also approached us. They do have another roadway that will need upgrade. Richmond Hill and Bryan County, I do want them to upgrade Harris Trail, and I think Port Royal, because those are currently classified as local roadways. But in the 2045 long-range transportation plan, they are improvement projects. So in the long-range transportation plan, it's okay because the revenues, assumed revenues, so you basically have, based on the past trend, you have certain federal dollars will be available, and you also have a local match. So you can use local match to justify it. But in terms of TIP is where you see the real money. So TIP, it has the funding code. So if the project is included in the TIP, you don't have a funding code, that is all local. So this is the time to review your roadway classification system and then document it and send us that. And then we will compile all the information and then work with GDOT to have all those roadways classified. So this is the time to work on it. And actually, just also want to let you know, this is very different from your local functional classification system, because the local system is based on the land use. And this is just for federal investments, federal funding. Because Bryan County actually sent me some adoption, the resolution that the Bryan County Commission adopted, like Harris Trail Road, in the local system is major arterial. But in our system, it's local. But the local documentation is a good supporting documents. So when we submit the request to GDOT, say, okay, this, that function. So if you have that adoptions by the city council, for example, Benton Boulevard, you have the resolution to upgrade it, let's submit that as the supporting document. So just go and review your street system. See which ones carry too much traffic that you don't have enough money to like make improvements to it. Let's try to make it on the federal system. Okay. Any questions on this?
Which road was it in Thunderbolt?
Thunderbolt actually talked to me about it's pretty close to the Savannah State University.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't remember. But we also, because GDOT used to have this hard cap system. So if you upgrade certain road, you need to downgrade other roads. So let's keep that in mind. So let's have some options. If they still have that hard cap, we can recommend some roadways, because I remember some of the roadways in Southside actually carries the annual daily traffic, like 300 is still classified as collector. So maybe that's not the right one. So, but just keep in mind, have some candidate. If GDOT decides you cannot do this, and we can exchange.
Okay.
So just take a look at your system and let us know, and we will start to compile the information and start to work with GDOT on this.
Any other questions on functional classification? All right. The next item is a status report on the MPO boundary, MOU, and bylaws updates.
Okay. Let me first show you the boundary, because Bryan County send us the letter. They don't want to be a part of it, but we did analysis. Asia actually did the tremendous work over here. And this is scenario one. So I'm just going to zoom in. So scenario one, as you can see, this pink color actually is unincorporated Bryan County within the Savannah urban area. So we have to include this area in the Cornfield boundary. And you can also see some donut holes like within Richmond Hill. I don't know why I said Richmond hasn't annexed these areas yet, but okay, these are the one of those ones. Yeah. So, but now they are still in unincorporated Chatham County, unincorporated Bryan County. So, but these areas. So for this scenario, we just added in, these blue areas over here just to make connections. So this is a scenario one, and scenario two. So scenario two, because of that, and we want to add this big hole over here, we just want to have like more smooth the boundary, because otherwise the roadways will be cut off, the area will be cut off. So this is the scenario two. And then the scenario three, we actually proposed like all of Southern Bryan County, because this is easier for us to do an analysis. even when we submit this boundary to GDOT, they give us the revenue projections. They have to do the vehicle miles of travel. This that will be easier for them because they don't have to do the measurement like how many miles lies within your boundary. But scenario one is Bryan County determined. So they are very determined not to be a part of us unless it is absolutely necessary. So just want to show you that. And then I will just give you a status report on what we did. So the boundary, since they already indicated that scenario one will be one to choose, and then we will forward the scenario one to the Corn Peel Board for adoption. Because this is the federal requirement. At the minimum, the MPA boundary shall encompass the entire existing urbanized area as defined by the Census Bureau, plus contiguous area expected to become urbanized within a 20-year forecast period for the Metropolitan Transportation Plan. So basically, those pink areas of unincorporated Bryan County within the Savannah urban area has no choice. So we have to include those. So we will present the scenario one to the Corn Peel Board for adoption. And that means our MOU has to be updated. So besides that, Bryan County, so currently the language in the draft MOU says in the Bryan County is the portion of Bryan County outside of Fort Stewart. We will revise that to Richmond Hill. So the areas in the MPA boundary would be Richmond Hill, the portions of the 2020 census defined Savannah urban area that fall within the unincorporated Bryan County, and the area that are connecting Richmond Hill and the Savannah urban area in Bryan County. So this is the boundary that resolved the boundary in Bryan County. In Effingham County, we got the language in the MOU is not accurate because our language is the portion of Effingham County south of State Route 119. But if you look at the Google map, the State Route 119, it not go straight, it goes up. So we're not including that up area. So we're going to the straight line. So the straight line, we revised the language. So in Effingham County, it will include the portion of Effingham County south of Straight Route 119, straight line, Indigo Road, straight line, Bethany Road. So underneath that straight line, that's the portion. And we actually submitted the language to Effingham County. I think Tim said okay with this language. So that's in the MOU. You will notice that the boundary description has changed. And since Northern Bryan County will not be a part of the MPO boundary, so Pembroke definitely will drop out because we do have signature pages. Like for example, in Effingham County, even if part of Guyton, part of Springfield will be included in them, they still need to be a signature provider because they have to agree with these terms. So previously, Northern Bryan County was included. That means Pembroke is automatically included. So they also have a signature page. But now we're deleting Pembroke totally. So that has been revised. And Exhibit A is the boundary. Of course, the boundary map will be revised. And Exhibit B is the membership fees. So we received the feedback from Effingham County. Effingham County will pay 100%. So instead of Effingham County to be determined, we change that to Effingham County will pay 100% of the county share of the membership dues, covering all of the Effingham municipalities located within the MPA boundary. So after this, please look at this language, and if you're not okay with it, let us know how to revise. For Bryan County, we just assume Richmond Hill is not going to pay for Bryan County. So even if they don't want to be part of it, more than 13,000 people live in our area. So Bryan County and the city of Richmond Hill will split the county's share of the membership dues based on their respective population within the MPA boundary. That's what we decided in Exhibit B. And for Exhibit B, also within the Chatham County, because currently Chatham County pays 25% of the municipality share because we are going to do election, and the chairman says, okay, you either do the election, we're not going to pay the 25%, or you don't do the election, we still pay the 25%. So we did the tally. The tally is not complete yet, but so far we got more election than no election. So that means Chatham County probably will not pay for the 25%. So we will change that to Chatham County and its municipalities will split the county share of the membership dues based on their respective population within the NPA boundary. But we are still collecting. I mean, this might change based on the final tally. Because if you haven't sent us your tally, please send coordinator with Sally and make sure that we do the tally. We are still missing Port Wentworth, Garden City, Effingham County. Do you want to vote?
Yeah. What?
Do you want to vote or no vote?
No, I mean, we'll send one in. I just wanted to get some
more
information.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, yeah, Richmond Hill, I think last fossil was favoring voting on election for the Columbia board. So it just, and the CAT. So we still need your input, Savannah Airport as well. And exhibit B also still the membership dues because, we got the input that, CAT doesn't have this as a strong physical capability. So we decided we will, reduce the amount that CAT pays to 60th percentile and the Savannah Airport and the Georgia Ports Authority is still based on 70th percentile. So you see the language has changed. The Chatham Air Transit will contribute a fixed amount based on the 60th percentile. And the Savannah Airport and the GPA were based on 70th percentile. Exhibit B, this is the 2020 census population. We have to double check because we are going to calculate the fees based on the population. So we double checked all the populations. So there are some like minor updates because Asia was using, previously she was using block group data and now she's using blocks that fits right into the boundary. So the number has been updated, so it's more accurate numbers. So these are the things that we have updated to the MOU and the bylaws and the boundary. And all of that, the MOU and the bylaws actually attached to this agenda. If you take a look at this, you can see all of the highlights, actually. So, for example, let me just see the MOU.
Okay. Do you have an update on the population counts?
Yes.
Since the change in Brian?
Yes. Okay. I'm trying to open this. Yeah, draft MOU. Okay, so you can see all the MOU updates are in green. So let me go to the last page. Last page is the population. Okay, this is the updated population.
Oh, so even with that change, there's still 13,000 unincorporated in Bryan County? Okay.
Yes, because the northern Bryan County is sparsely populated. Yeah, so the majority of the population is still living in southern Bryan County. So that's why we have no choice and they have no choice, basically. That's what I've been telling them, because the federal rule requires to include that portion. So, but Effingham County's population changed a little bit in Guyton and Springfield. You can see, I think a little bit less, based on this block level data. So if you just check on the MOU and all of this has been updated and I have highlighted, all these in green. So these would be the language. So when you have a chance and take a look at this, the bylaws will still need, each individual committee to get together and talk about their portion of the bylaws. So we will keep on working on the bylaws, but I think hopefully we will have the new MPO boundary adopted in February and have the MOU at least adopted in April. Any questions? Okay.
Thank you, Wakota. I guess the next item, information reports, GDOT project status update.
Katie had to leave and said, if you have any questions, email or call her.
Okay. All right. After GDOT is Chatham County. For our status update, first thing I'd like to acknowledge the transportation team. So we have Alan Blake, who has been with Chatham County for about 3 years now. And we've got Damon Rice, our newest engineer, who's been with us for, 2 weeks now? So super excited to have him on the team. As far as status updates, most of the things are included on the report here.
We had the A3M meeting for the Chevis Road project this week, and we finally have a date for the PFPR for Girard, and that's going to be March 5th and 6th. So if you have any questions about any of the projects listed here, please let me know.
Can you send us the meeting information?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
All right. The next item is going to be City of Savannah project status update.
And I'll just hit the high points. Project Durin, the city met with GDOT leadership to look at operational and safety improvements, ongoing on operational and safety improvements, and still working with Federal Highway and GDOT about the NEPA requirements. DeLesseps construction utility relocation is ongoing. If you use DeLesseps, please be advised that there is a detour between Costa Rica and Cuba Streets. Truman Phase 2B the tied to our part of Truman Trail, our capital projects group will plan to award a contract here at the February 8th. And that was last week. So we should have awarded a contract last week. Middle Ground Road has closed and is scoring, and I-16 ramp removal. The city signed an MOU with GDOT to outline cost sharing and project management, and that is moving forward.
Thank you. Savannah Hilton Head International Airport.
Thank you. Yeah. We currently have three projects that are under construction for the airport. We have the security checkpoint expansion, the demo air cargo, and the fuel storage expansion project. The demo air cargo project is substantially complete as of February 8th. We're just wrapping up some punch list items at the moment, and that'll be contractually complete hopefully by the end of February. The fuel storage expansion project, we're adding 340,000 gallon tanks to increase our fuel load. That project, we had the pre-construction meeting this morning. They were awarded the notice to proceed this afternoon, so ground will be breaking on that today. And the security checkpoint expansion has been ongoing since October of 2022. The steel framing for the expansion project is up. We're working on the interior at the moment, and projected completion date for that is September to December of this year.
Thank you. Any questions for the airport? All right. Up next is going to be Chatham Area Transit.
Okay. So the ITS system on our ferry that's still on hold. We just have to. We're doing some maintenance on it and need to make sure we have sufficient service out there on all our ferry vessels. For the maintenance facility, speaking of maintenance, update on the final engineering. The final engineering is complete for that, and we will be submitting to the city for permitting soon. For that facility, for the ferry dock, we did do the IF bid, and we're just awaiting for the issuance of the award for that. For Savannah Bells, this is the purchase of a new third replacement ferry. It's coming from multiple funding sources. And so the T-HUD, it's been complete. The Georgia Transit Trust Fund, we were awarded that as well. And we are finalizing the flexing of the funds from FHWA to FTA. And I just got an email from them saying that should take about 90 days to go through that process. So we have big boats. It takes a lot to move forward with that. For our bus, this is what I get for just copying and pasting last month's report. It did actually go to the board for approval for that electric bus system. The charging stations, so we had Georgia Power out on the yard to install those chargers and found out that our concrete is too thick to drill, and so they are looking at actually installing the conduit on above ground. So we're working through that. And then the ARPA funding, that study moving forward with that. Just some other updates that aren't related to grants. This weekend, the American Public Transportation Association, the APTA CEO conference will be here in Savannah. So that's a great opportunity for lots of transportation officials to be hopping around the city, and including the FTA administrator will be here as well. So we're really excited about being the host city for that. It's a real good thing for Savannah to do that. And then also in March, we are starting our service exchange, service board change, which includes the extension of service into Port Wentworth. So this is the first time we will be providing services into the city of Port Wentworth. So very exciting.
Any questions for Kat? All right, up next, is there anything from LATS SCDOT? Yeah. All right. So their status report is included on the agenda, and then TIP funding tracking report.
Yeah. Yeah. We received the latest updates right before the TCC meeting, so we were not able to attach the latest report. Okay. Everybody except the city. So hopefully next time we will get the all the information done before the deadline. So.
Thank you. All right. Are there any other comments or public comments? Do we have anything today? All right. And so the notices are listed here. I had one I wanted to add. We had a meeting earlier today about a LMIG supplemental being offered this year. They're going to release it, I think, sometime in April. So that is a funding opportunity for the municipalities. You can look for more information. They said to come out around April.
So it's additional funding.
Additional
LMIG funds.
Yeah, and they aren't expecting to have a match with that. So.
Okay.
Are or are not? I'm sorry.
Are not expecting to have a match.
I think City of Savannah is the only one that has the safety action plan, right? Because all the others are developing a safety action plan. Because this is the, we actually listed some of these grant opportunities. One of those would be the SS4A. So apparently, the U.S. government, U.S. DOD has awarded too many projects on the development of the safety plan. But now they have some extra funds to implement if you already have a plan. So we are actually working at, I think, Bike Walk Savannah and City of Savannah, Title Town Coordinator. We're trying to submit some kind of application for the SS4 grant.
Yeah, I feel like I've had lots of meetings on that one too. And demonstration funds are included in that. So they definitely encourage people to get creative if there's any demonstration projects that you're interested in as well.
Yeah, so let's grab some dollars if we can, yeah, get that. Okay.
Okay. Is there anything else? Thank you all for today. Our next core MPO TCC meeting will be April 18th at 2 p.m. And I suppose we can look for a 2050 MTP project prioritization.
Probably before that.
Okay. So we'll have another.
Yeah, we will schedule a meeting probably in March.
Okay.
Yeah, so probably will be virtual. So
thank you all so much for today.
Thank you.